Hello, hello, hello. Hello, Georgians. Hello, global citizens. And hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my high school best friend, Damian Galvin, created in June of this year to talk about issues that interest us, issues that disgust us, and issues that America needs to know about. In other words, myself and Damian created this podcast to deconstruct public policy issues of the past and the present and create a more equitable future for all of us. We have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys, but before we play this episode, we're going to give a special thank you to our sponsor, Patreon, and our wonderful team here at Politician, which includes high school juniors Jada Pilling, Yi Shen, and Julia Hartman. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoy. See you in the episode.
And we're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politician. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Radical Liberal Varun Kadathala. I'm back here for another podcast with Damian, talking about the debate tonight with Kelly Loeffler against Radical Liberal Raphael Warnock. Watched it a couple of hours ago. We both watched it, had a good time. It was, to say the least, interesting, enticing, something we were going to talk about for a while. But I wanted to ask you, how was your weekend? We were off for a week, and how were your past couple of weeks?
It was good. We were studying for the SAT. The SAT went mid, but thankfully I'm going to be putting my my brain down a food disposal after the debate that we just watched. I need to get radical liberal Raphael Warnock out of my head. I'm probably going to have dreams and nightmares about just Kelly Loeffler looking at me, telling me radical liberal Raphael Warnock. How was your weekend though? We can start there.
It was definitely good. You know, last week was good too. We got the Obama aide, Eric Schultz, on our podcast.
Yes,
he's going to
yes.
be on August 15th for an episode with us. We'll release that Friday. I forget what it is. I think it's the 18th that Friday. We have our first midterm that day, so it'll be a interesting experience.
Man,
but
life of teenagers.
I think that life of teenagers. It's scheduling. A lot of it's literal harassment, man. The SAT were. That was a whooping. But anyways,
yeah.
we'll get on with it. This weekend, today, I went to a gun range in the morning. And Johns Creek gun range. I wouldn't recommend it. Nobody was wearing a mask.
Oh, I know where that is.
You know where it is, right?
Yeah, so I owned my parents owned a restaurant there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, right in that shopping center. Yeah, what were you saying, though? Did you shoot?
I shot.
Okay.
I shot a couple of rounds, and they taught me how to shoot. I shot a couple of rounds. I was like, I figured I can't talk about gun violence without shooting a gun myself. So I got the experience. I might go back again after Corona ends. Obviously not now. I went in, and like we were the only people wearing masks, me and my dad, and they were all looking
That's
at us
crazy.
Like we were crazy. And I was like, it's a whole different universe. Workers weren't wearing masks. Nobody was wearing a mask. Our trainee wasn't wearing a mask. So I wasn't comfortable, but it was nonetheless a good experience. Wouldn't recommend that place, but it was good.
That's an affluent place. That's weird. It figures that they weren't wearing masks. Yeah, that's a pretty affluent. Yeah, that's a pretty affluent place. That's a nice place to be shooting.
Right.
You should come shoot with us sometime. We got some guns, and we go down to this little ranch in a more rural area. We'll invite you sometime. You can go out and shoot.
Love to come.
Yeah.
To come.
What did you shoot?
No, some kind of pistol. It was a beginner gun. So
okay.
They didn't
okay.
tell me what it was.
Like a
was
nine,
no
like a 9mm.
I think it was.
Yeah.
There was no safety on it, so
yeah.
I suspected that much.
Yeah, that wouldn't make sense. Damn, no safety? That's crazy.
No.
That's crazy. But they probably had like a what's it called? A trigger lock on it.
Yeah, some kind of trainer gun.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about, you know, first of all, Rudy Giuliani getting COVID-19.
That's a
shot,
right?
I mean, it wasn't surprising.
Right?
I was going to say surprising, you know. That was a shot, sure. We'll see what happens. But he's in the hospital right now. He is recovering. I looked on CNN. And I was like, Dad, he was in a meeting. But I said, Dad, Rudy got COVID. And he said he got up from his meeting, came out, talked to me about it, and went back. He was like, what the hell? Because his son got it. And I was like, well, he would have gotten it then.
Yeah.
But he didn't get it then. And now he has COVID. So
that's interesting.
I don't know.
That's weird. It's weird. His son was tweeting too, right? And his son was like, my dad's in, because he's in the hospital now. He didn't just get COVID. He was admitted to the hospital.
Oh, he's in the hospital.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So so obviously he's having, he's either scared or he's having some more severe symptoms. But, I was talking to my mom about it. And I love to hear your take about this. It's not the issue. Like she was telling me, oh, he's going to get COVID. And she did the same thing with Trump. It was like, oh, he's going to get COVID and he's going to get over it because nothing ever happens to them. Referring to like, you know, these affluent people that get COVID, and the Republicans, when they get COVID, they typically tend I haven't heard a case where someone dies from COVID that you do get what I'm saying, on the national spotlight.
Yeah, absolutely.
So she was like, he's going to get it and he's going to say, oh, it's nothing to worry about. Kind of what Trump did. And I was like, you see, the issue is it is nothing to worry about when it's just you, when it's just one person. And more than likely, Rudy Giuliani is going to be fine. The problem isn't people getting it. The problem is people not wearing masks and continuing to spread it. Because the more people get it, the higher the likelihood is of someone passing away from it. Obviously, Rudy Giuliani has he's obese.
Old.
I'd give him a 90. I'd give him a 95%. 95% chance.
He's got the same chance as Trump. Yeah. And with the meds that he has that he's on right now, 95%.
I'd give him a 95%, 96, maybe 97% chance of living. That's pretty good. But when you're talking about 10,000 people all having a 97% chance of living, that means that they have a 3% chance of dying. And you're going to get some deaths there.
And look, how many is 3% of 300 million people?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's look at that.
Exactly.
And I'll look it up for you right now. 3% of 3 million is around 9 million people. That's a lot of people. I mean, when you're looking at talking about a 97% survivor rate, I don't know if that's the case necessarily, but that's what it would be if it was that, you know, 9 million people. And it's substantial. And you talked about how Rudy may have been scared and going to the hospital. Mm-hmm. The first thing is, if you're scared, wear a mask.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing.
Well, he was here in our capital.
Care about, right. He was. He was here. And I didn't know that until now.
Yeah, well, he was I only brought it up because he wasn't wearing a mask when he was here. And he was taking pictures and he was being followed by, you know, the media. And he was with his big coalition of people walking around, touching things. And you know Rudy Giuliani. I mean, there's the video of him, like, coughing into his hand and then shaking the attorney's hand and, like, blowing his nose. And so he's very careless when it comes to COVID-19. I think he's just very careless in general. And I don't know how he went from Man of the Year to... I mean, joke of the century.
He was a bad mayor. I'm not going to put that myth out. Yeah. He was an amazing mayor.
Yeah.
Especially after 9/11, Rudy Giuliani held up that city. And to see him deteriorate this much, like, think about it. If I went up to Rudy Giuliani right now, he was in my house, I'd literally wear a hazmat suit. I wouldn't go within 10 inches of him. I'd wear a hazmat suit because of how much of a risk he is. He's a biohazard. And so when you see him going around and shaking people's hands and not wearing a mask anywhere, not wearing any sort of PPE because he just is subscribed to the propaganda that the right produces, it's not surprising.
Yeah.
And beyond that, you know, you talked about being scared. If you're scared, wear a mask. If you care about others, wear a mask. And certainly he doesn't care about others or the USA because he's pushing forth these voter fraud allegations, which we'll talk about in a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, just him in general, I hope he's well. I hope he gets better.
Definitely.
And I hope that he learns because you look at Trump, he didn't learn, but the fact of the matter is that people did learn.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Christie got the virus. And as soon as he came out of recovery, he went, well, President Trump should have worn a mask. I should have worn a mask around President Trump. It's not okay. I said it was okay before, but right now I'm standing on my ground and saying, well, I was hurt. And Chris Christie went to the hospital for days. He's morbidly obese. I don't care what you say about him. He's morbidly obese. And he was in the hospital for days. And because of how much it hurt him, it's killed people. Herman Cain died because of going to a Trump Tulsa rally. It's killed people. But for him to come out, Rudy Giuliani, a prominent figure in the investigation, to come out and say, I'm going to wear a mask, or at least wear a mask around people, it would mean a lot to so many Americans and save so many lives.
Yeah, definitely. I like how you said that if you were around Rudy Giuliani, if he was in your house, you'd be in a hazmat suit. I'd be wearing earmuffs. Yeah. I would not want to listen to anything that he's saying. And one thing that made me want to wear earmuffs tonight was the debate that took place here in Georgia between Kelly Loeffler. I got it. There you go. First try. And radical, liberal, leftist, socialist, monster, horrible
Raphael Warnock.
Not Reverend. Do not include that label. But
no,
it was, I'm scared. I'm absolutely terrified of what I watched on the left side of my screen a couple hours ago. We're recording this 3-4 hours after it happened. Man, I've seen zombies show more emotion. I looked at my dad and I was like, is the left side of our screen like on replay? I mean, I counted the amount of times that she moved. During the debate, she moved every time that she wanted to rebuttal. So she moved about 4 or 5 times. She moved her right hand up to rebuttal, and she moved 1 time her head. She moved her neck 1 time to look at Raphael Warnock.
This is one time.
She looked at the camera and smiled for an hour. The exact same smile. And she had three or four responses that she had to every single question verbatim. Verbatim.
Right. And you talk about a bad smile. You look at Joe Biden, how well he smiles. Look at Kelly Loeffler, how forced that is.
It's so creepy, man.
You talk about it is creepy. The whole thing was, and you talk about, we don't usually talk this in depth and this emotionally about something, but if you look at radical liberal leftist Karl Marx, Raphael Warnock on that side of the screen.
Essentially the same person. They were the same person. Karl Marx and Reverend Warren.
Like, I was queuing up my thoughts about her and him and Marxism, but we'll talk about that later. But anyways, yeah. I think that she was just one word to describe it, robotic. And robotic Kelly Loeffler.
Yeah.
That's what was on that left side. And I think that honestly, they could have fared well with a robot better than Kelly Loeffler did. And that's the reality of it. I mean, I think that when you talk about Democrats being controlled by the socialists and the commies, I mean, she was controlled basically by whoever was prepping her, giving her that script. Every single response. Incredible, and I told my dad, I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if she had a earpiece or a teleprompter. Like, we talked about, you know, Trump talking about Joe Biden and saying Joe Biden may have had an earpiece, but look at this. Like, today, you saw so much of not even thinking, not one time, and you look at it. And Raphael Warnock was writing stuff down. Every single time he looked at him, he was thinking, writing stuff down, visibly, you know, putting thought and effort into it, engaged.
Yeah.
And right, and Kelly Loeffler on the left side was not even writing a single thing down. I saw her screen for almost half the debate. Wanted to see if she was ever writing stuff down. She never was.
And I don't think she was breathing.
Right. She was just no look. She was, let's not kid ourselves. She was incredibly nervous, but she was also incredibly scripted. She wasn't talking from her heart.
It was ridiculous, man. It was ridiculous. I at the end of the debate on their closing statements, she said, and I will say it how she said it first, and then I'll tell you what I told my parents when I was watching the debate with them. She said, the decision next month is a decision between my plan, the American dream, and radical leftist Raphael Warnock's plan, socialism. I was like, man, you could, like, if you read anything like that, you could read the most engaging story like that, and I'd fall asleep in 10 minutes. I was like, I could say that better. The way that she should have said it was, next January, we have a decision to make. We can make a decision between my plan, the American dream, or we can make a decision between radical leftist Raphael Warnock's planned socialism.
Right.
And like, first of all, I don't believe what I just said, because the American dream, I don't think is buying a $30 million private jet with taxpayer money. I don't think that I don't think that it's selling stocks and letting your constituents die. I don't think that that's the American dream. I don't think that it's racism. I don't think that it's fighting with your basketball team that you own. I don't think many Americans want that to be the American dream. But when you say something with emotion, it comes across as, first of all, more genuine, and second of all, more engaging. I can't remember one thing that she said, man, besides radical leftist Raphael Warnock. That works well
with 35% of Americans, the 35% that voted for President Trump that lost in Georgia, but you got to expand your boundaries here. She's not going to win if she doesn't expand her boundaries.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, in some deep red state like let's think of a deep red state.
Georgia.
Texas. I mean, Georgia's not deep red anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah.
Texas. She goes to Texas, runs for office saying radical liberal leftist. Well, not that radical liberal leftist Raphael Warnock. She says that she might win.
Yeah.
But not here, because in Georgia, Joe Biden got elected. And that's the simple reality of it. I mean, everybody says it. But anyways, let's talk about how she tries to hide from her past. Her current as a millionaire, as the richest sitting senator in office right now. You know, she has $500 million in her net worth, in her positions right now. And I think that, you know, she keeps trying to hide from it. In her closing, she wasn't talking about how rich she was. She was talking about the fact that she was a farmer. She came out of a farming household. Well, look at her right now. She's not by any sense a people's person. I think that she's the opposite of that.
I don't think she's a
person.
And
the fact that she's trying to hide from it, well, I don't know. Maybe she's a robot. I don't know. It wouldn't be far-fetched given what we've seen this year. But the first humanoid robot to appear on a stage against radical liberal
Andrew
leftists.
Yang was right about AI. God damn it.
No, yeah. We just don't know about it, man. All the billionaires have got some stuff hiding off their sleeves. It doesn't work well for her.
What's his face? Put a nanochip in her brain. Elon Musk put a nanochip in her brain.
Elon
he
Musk.
Was controlling her from his couch.
and watch his Tesla stock skyrockets tomorrow because of Kelly Loeffler and her performance.
He puts out a tweet and he's like, actually, Kelly Loeffler was... How does he talk? He's not British. He has like his South African accent.
No.
He's like, actually... Yeah. I don't know how he talks, but he's like, Kelly Loeffler was my creation. He sounds like a... He sounds... I don't know. I like his accent.
And people would believe it.
Yeah.
And it would go up.
Hey.
And it wouldn't be so far-fetched. I mean, I just think that she kept hiding from it. And when Raphael Warnock came back and said, well, I was raised... In a 12-person family in the projects or whatever of Georgia. Well, that's believable because that is Raphael Warnock. He's not some kind of millionaire. He's not, not worth $500 million. He's a reverend in an Atlanta church, right? He's not making this kind of money. But Loeffler hiding from her present, it's easy to debunk, right? And so you can't run on something that's simply, not that it's not true, but it's today. I just don't know. I'm not going to say too much about Kelly Loeffler and her financial problems.
And she was talking about her past, and she was mentioning her past, and she was like, I've always worked to bring people together, like throughout my whole, and I was like, that's just not, there's nothing wrong with not working to bring people together, but that's just not true.
Well, then you can begin by engaging in coronavirus relief funding. Exactly.
Yeah, that was weird.
And stop breaking apart divisions, right? Because how do we come together for a coronavirus relief bill? It's through compromise. And if you can't do that sitting in the Senate for so long, then what makes me believe you can do it now?
Yeah. It's just weird because she was like, I've brought, Reverend Warnock needs to stop talking about this and that and being a socialist and blah blah blah. Actually, I'm putting more emotion into it than she did, but then she said we need to start talking about how we can help the aid that I brought to our constituents. And I was like, what aid? Like, what are you talking about? Well, it is just not true.
And if there was any aid, the aid was like when in April of this year?
Yeah, exactly.
And how long was that ago? How long has Americans been starving in the streets? How long have your constituents been starving in the streets? So I just don't get it. I mean, you can't take credit for something that isn't there.
Yeah.
Right? We had aid in the beginning of the coronavirus relief package, but right now we've been fighting for so long and nothing has been happening. And I blame both sides. Yeah. But the fact that she's trying to take credit for aid that hasn't appeared since April – I think it's a fallacy. I mean, I think that my dad was talking earlier and he made some good points about how they're appealing to their base and the fact that, saying that somebody's a radical liberal leftist is probably a good thing for that 35% of Georgians. But then I was like, well, let's look at why you're saying that. Donald Trump said the exact same thing time and time again. But the difference was that Trump was like radical liberal leftist. I told him, you got to stop putting emotion into it. She said radical liberal leftist. Trump wouldn't have won that way. Mm-mm. There's no way he would have, right? The reason why Trump won, the reason why Trump's so successful, and it's my opinion, but it's the reason why is because he put so much emotion, so much, genuineness into what he does.
Yeah.
Genuineness can go in a good way or a bad way. I'm not saying which way he's going, but he's being very genuine. He's being, honest. And so when she comes out here and goes off of a script and puts no emotion into it, well, what are her constituents going to like?
Yes.
I don't think any constituent, any Republican really looked at that debate and said, well, I'm going to vote for Kelly Loeffler. I'm going to go down to the polls right now and vote for Kelly Loeffler.
Yeah.
No, I just don't think you need emotion to make points. Without them, they're obsolete.
Yeah. I think that the term that I would describe Trump as or what I would describe Trump as is a man, despite whether you like it or not, who speaks his mind. Tonight, I didn't see a mind being spoken. If anything, I saw a teleprompter, keynotes.
I saw lines being read.
Yeah.
Lines being read.
And it's just, I don't know. I'm not a conspiracy theorist by any measure, but it was weird, man. I don't think that I could do that if I tried for an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It threw me completely off and it threw me for a loop. And that's what I told. I told my parents the same thing that you're telling your parents. I was like, she did a good job. She did a good job appealing to her base. She sat up there. She said what her base wanted to hear. She's not going to win. You can't win by appealing to Trump is literally the exact representation of that. But you want to know what the problem is? The problem is that they don't think that Trump has lost. So they're saying, hey, if we do what the big guy did, maybe we can win. But Trump is a representation of the fact that you cannot appeal to your base. You cannot just appeal to your base. You have to appeal to Americans as a whole. And here in Georgia, you have to appear appeal to Georgians as a whole. But even more than that, I think that this race, I mean, it was on CNN. I was watching it on CNN.
That's what I was doing.
And this race is national. Whether you like it or not, as a Georgian, this race is national. So you're not just trying to appeal to Georgians. You're trying to appeal to the guys in Florida that donated millions of dollars to Jamie Harrison, if I'm not mistaken, when he was running against Lindsey Graham.
Right.
You want to appeal to
the
people.
It wasn't Florida. It was South Carolina.
So. Was it? No, I know. But men in Florida donated $1 million.
You're
trying to appeal to America as a whole just as much as you're trying to appeal to your constituents, because those big donations that might come from people in California, in New York, in Florida, in Texas, in Colorado, they can help you win just as much as getting. I mean, it's going to help you in the long run. And I don't think that from California, from Texas, if Republicans from across the country were watching, I don't think they watched for very long. I don't think that they watched for very long at all, because it was, I've never seen a debate. She got smoked, man. I mean, she just got, she got
and
smoked.
She could have done better. I mean, her speechwriter, I think she wrote something along the lines that this is one of the most contentious and impactful races in the entire nation. I won't say she said it because her speechwriter wrote it, but she said that. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that she was talking about how important it is and how she had so much to lose and how we had so much to lose, she didn't convey that. She was like, we have so much to lose.
Yeah.
And you couldn't find the emotion there, even if you tried.
Yeah.
And I certainly tried because I was so confused. I was like, am I really watching this right now? I tried to find the emotion in her, and I told my dad in the middle, I was like, well, this is a lost cause. When she said radical, liberal, leftist, whatever, for the seventh or eighth time, then I was like, well, Dad, I think that she would have fared better if she did what David Perdue did.
And not showed up.
Forced Ossoff to literally ask a question to an empty podium.
Yeah.
And that's what Ossoff did today. Can we talk about Ossoff asking a question? I didn't watch the whole debate.
I can't
do that.
Yeah.
I think that I know enough about Ossoff. I'm not going to watch the debate. I'm not going to watch him debate an empty podium. It's a statement, but it's not much to listen to. I've watched Ossoff speak in person, so I think that we've both seen him before. We know about him. But
yes. The
point here is that he had to ask a question to an empty podium.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Georgians have had to do for the last 6 years. We've had to ask questions to an empty podium because he hasn't held a public town hall in 6 years. And the last time he had a debate, he got destroyed. So I can understand. I can't. Honestly, I cannot understand why you would not show up and face your constituents and face questions that not only the American people have, but Georgians have. And furthermore, I cannot understand in what way does this help you? Does this work? You just gave a man so much ammunition. I understand that the last time they debated, there's the clip of him going, "Senator, you're a crook." Of John Ossoff saying, "Senator, you're a crook." And that clip blew up. It went completely, I mean, it went everywhere. Sure, it looked bad for David Perdue, but an empty podium, I think, looks so much worse. And when I was like, I understand the plan, but you just let John Ossoff speak for, I think it was an hour. They also had an hour, right? Or was it 30 minutes? It was 30 minutes because he wasn't there.
Same format.
Yeah.
No, it was the same format. The exact same format. The exact same time.
Yes. But I think that the debate only lasted 30 minutes because there wasn't another person answering. Regardless. You just let him speak. We're discussing either up for an hour or 30 minutes on your name. You just gave him a platform where you can't defend yourself and you can't attack him for an hour. How does that help you? Where does that help? He literally got to say that you don't care about Georgians. And I'm again, you know, I always make the joke that I'm Damien centrist Galvin, right? I'm centrist here. It just doesn't make sense. You just don't care about your constituents. You cannot say that you care about them and not show up to debate the man that's trying to take your seat.
You also can't afford it, right? He won by 49.7% compared to Ossoff's 47.9%. He can't afford it. He has to make his case. Because, I mean, he won by 2%. That's people who may not show up this election this time around. He's not in a position to where he can just skip debates and expect to win. That's just simply not realistic. Now, I think that I was going to say while you were speaking, I was thinking about saying next that I respect Kelly Loeffler for coming on and actually debating Raphael Warnock. The fact that I'm saying that and repeating that to myself right now, the fact that I'm saying I respect somebody for debating,
yeah,
that's a given.
Yeah.
You have to debate your opponent. It's the American way. We don't just give out free victories. You have to earn your victories. You can't just go out and tweet, get your staff writers to tweet. We're not voting for your speech writers or your tweet writers. We're voting for you. And so when you see people using a script, and you know, this is not a stretch. You know Kelly Loeffler was on a script the entire time. I don't know if Warnock was, but I know she was.
Yeah.
And we're not voting for speechwriters. We're not voting for tweet writers. We're not voting for those people. We're voting for actual actionable policy and actual emotion-full politicians. And I think
people,
we're not voting for robots. We're voting for people. And I think that if you tuned in, independents would not be swayed, in my opinion, by that kind of rhetoric, if that's what you want to call it. I think it's words, not rhetoric. Rhetoric takes emotion to deliver words.
Yeah.
And it keeps talking about it, and I think that it's repetitive right now, but it's important for us to consider that, because I can't remember too much about what Kelly Loeffler said, but everything she said
it was boring.
They were all attacks.
It was a bread
sandwich. They were all attacks.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that as much as Warnock attacked Loeffler, I think that Loeffler modeled her advertisement in what she was saying. She was advertising against Warnock, against whatever he was, radical, liberal, leftist Warnock. Every single one of her advertisements was played out 50 times during that debate. I didn't pay for advertisements.
Yeah.
Right? That was supposed to be a no advertisement debate, but there was advertisements every single time. The same bullshit. I'm not going to say it. The same BS. BS in her advertisements were repeated.
It wasn't, though, because it was just the transcript of her advertisements being read in a monotone way. Because at least her advertisements have a little flair, right? Speaking of a little flair, did you see Warnock's advertisement talking about the fact that she just talks a bunch of malarkey about him? Or, you know, the term that, the BS. but did you see
what I said? Malarkey.
Did you see his advertisement?
Man, I'm feeling bad about saying BS now. But I saw a couple of his advertisements. I saw the one where he talks to law enforcement officers.
Yes.
And he was like, well, I support law enforcement. I didn't see his one about Loeffler.
There's one where he he's like walking down the street with his dog. And he's like, Kelly Loeffler, chooses to attack me because she can't say anything good that she's done. And frankly, I don't think that she can. I don't, she's been in this position for 10 months, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think that she can say, and you know, I've done this for Georgians, I've done that for Georgians. She can't bring home the bacon, right? So what he says, we know what she's saying is a bunch of, and then he throws his dog's feces into the trash can.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, that's a really powerful advertisement coming from a Democrat, because I think we talked about it last time on the podcast.
Yeah,
that's not, and I've seen both of these Democratic candidates be aggressive and take, you know, obviously you feel bad for saying BS, but taking that attitude into commercials and taking it onto the debate floor, they're attacking their opponents. And it's not something that you commonly see from Democrats, especially after Obama, didn't speak negatively about Trump. It's very...
We try to be the better person.
Yeah.
We can't.
But you can't
win and be a better person. You have to take a little bit of some, a little bit of the other.
Yes.
You have to sometimes be the bad person to win an election. And that's not the bad person in terms of like you and your constituents. It's you and the other person. Be willing to attack them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, Warnock could have done that today. I think that he did fall a little bit short in attacking Loeffler. He could have said, well, Loeffler, stop reading off your script. Like Chris Christie said back in 2016 to Marco Rubio. He told him, he was like, stop reading off of your five different bullet points and tell the American people what you think.
Yeah.
And I think that Warnock, as good as he was, I think that he had terrible competition and he could have capitalized upon that. We always, you know, criticize people who were watching and watching them debate. I think that Warnock could have done two things. Number one, and me and my dad talked about this. Number one, it's speaking out against how scripted Loeffler was.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew it. He was laughing. I saw him grinning. And you could see he was visibly amused by Loeffler. And then beyond that, I think he should have asked for more opportunities to speak himself and about what Loeffler said. Because she always got the last word, it seemed, in talks. Two things he could have done.
Yeah. Definitely. I think that I agree with you that he could have. I think the one thing that I believe he should have done was put more pressure on her to break that script. I think that he should have been more like the presidential debates, been more like, what are you talking about? Explain yourself. Explain. Just put more pressure on her to actually say something when she was rebuttaling, because I don't necessarily agree that he had to rebuttal a lot more because she was saying a whole lot of nothing. And when she was,
when she was
rebuttaling, she was saying a whole lot of nothing. So it was like, yeah, you can get the last, I mean, if I was standing up there, I would let her get the last word because, I was tuning out every time that
it's
she was rebuttaling. Yeah, exactly.
It's self-destructive.
Exactly. Yeah. I wasn't even paying attention to what she was saying when she was rebuttaling because after the first 10 minutes,
the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is that half of America is. Those half of people are going to be keep on listening to Kelly Loeffler and her rebuttals. Now, I think that the only way, and I was thinking about this for a while because I had the same position as you talking to my dad. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, the more she speaks, the more she self-destructs. But
yeah.
The problem is that many, many, many Americans still want to listen to her. They actively want to hear that kind of stuff. And to them, that's all good. That's all good. So I think that you have to rebut to get those independent voters. But that's my perspective.
Move on. Definitely. Well, one thing, you know, just talking about this, obviously we send our condolences to the staffer that died in the car accident on Kelly Loeffler's team. And Reverend Warnock sent his condolences, and I would love to have the clip, of it. And I recommend that if you can find the clip, our viewers, if you guys can find the clip, guys and girls, go watch it. When he gives his condolences, it's like she doesn't even break. Like I understand wanting kind of like how Joe Biden did it. You know, Joe Biden, I think took a similar approach to Kelly Loeffler in looking into the camera a lot. That was definitely something that you can tell he wanted to do. And that was something you could tell Kelly Loeffler wanted to do. But in the moment when you're giving your condolences to someone, it was weird that she didn't turn. She didn't have to speak into the microphone. She could have just turned to him and just sincerely said, thank you. We appreciate it. But she just kept smiling. Like, she kept the exact same grin. There was no change in her facial expressions. And then I think the broadcasting network also, the moderator, also gave his condolences to her. And again, she didn't even look at him. Like, I don't know.
I think it would have fared her well to go off the script.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if she was, I don't know if she heard it, to be honest. I feel like she was kind of just repeating her keynotes in her head and just looking at the camera, just blank staring into the camera and looking. It was so odd. It was so odd. You said that you give respect to Kelly Loeffler for debating. I don't know if that was a debate. I think that the podium, you could have left an empty podium there and it would have been the same exact thing.
That's what I said. I said that you could have left it empty like Ostov had, and it would have been the same kind of format because you could have played the same tape over and over again, which is what we got.
Exactly.
We got the same Loeffler advertisement played over and over and over again.
It was just her on repeat.
It's what happened.
It was so
And so when you look
odd.
At it, I think – and he talked about how Warnock, you know, he didn't put enough pressure on her to break from her script, but the moderators did. And I think all three of them did an amazing job putting pressure on Loeffler to break from that script. They asked her about many times about did Trump lose the election? Did Joe Biden win the election? Every single time. 250, and I know that word for word right now, 250 open investigations are apparently happening with no results whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right? It was the same malarkey line presented. And I'll say, you guys know what I mean. Malarkey line presented during that debate. And I think that the fact that she can recognize the president-elect of the United States of America says a lot about her ability to compromise in office.
I think that it reminds me similarly to the Hollywood Access tapes. Listen, she is obviously an incredible and renowned businesswoman. I don't know the morality or the ethics. I don't know her morals, and I don't know the ethics that she applies to her business interactions. Obviously, the one thing that I can think of is the circumstance of insider trading that she's being accused of partaking in. But beyond that, she's obviously a very wealthy woman that, as far as I'm concerned, has accumulated her wealth in a fair way that, you know, she's a law-abiding citizen in those terms. And, you know, she's a powerful woman, so props to her. She didn't gain her money in a lot of the ways that I think sexist men typically blame, you know, women for gaining their money, either divorce or their father's passing away. I think that she worked hard for her money, if I'm not mistaken. And so, you know, all due credit to her. She's obviously an incredible, amazing woman and an absolute terrible senator. She's just a horrible public figure. She's not good at being asked questions. She's not good at answering them. She's not good at speaking. She's not good at listening. She's not good at answering. She's good at being a businesswoman and not a politician. And there's nothing wrong with that. But in the words of LeVar Ball, stay in your lane. You got it all going for you. Over there, why are you gonna get involved in insider trading? And as she mentioned, now she's receiving, you know, death threats and this or that. So is Reverend Warnock. And so are Ossoff and so is every candidate and public figure national spotlight.
You walk into that. When you become exactly. a state senator or a national senator, you walk into the spotlight and you
exactly.
You don't deserve it, but you're going to get it.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Have to
exactly.
It.
So every single.
You have to be ready for it.
Regardless of what side of the spectrum you're on, the side of the political, you're going to get it. AOC gets yeah. it. Bernie Sanders gets it, just like Trump gets it. And Marco Rubio gets it. And Rudy Giuliani. You just get them. But why would you put yourself in that position and not be. I mean, she's just not going to go very far as a politician. It's weird to me. It's just absurd to me how, I mean, this spot was in every sense given to her. I understand that she might have had to work hard for a lot of other things in life. I don't mean to diminish those things or her work ethic in that sense, but this spot was just given to her. And I think that as Georgians, we just need to recognize, hey, cool. It was given to her. It's not hers. It's ours.
I mean, you talk about Raphael Warnock and how he mentioned Reverend, and he mentioned how well this she was appointed as senator and she has disappointed America.
Yeah, that was
and
a good
Georgians,
line.
And that was a hell of a good line. Mm-hmm. I can't say it as well as he said it, but it was really, really good at that moment. And I think that it sums up. I think that he appealed to regular Georgians, sums up that you know what they were feeling and what they have been feeling for a long time. And I think that he was a people's person. He did speak not from a script, but from his heart. That was a scripted line. May have not been. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think that it spoke to a lot of people. And I think that that's what Kelly Loeffler was trying to do, but she didn't get it passed by speaking in that monotone voice.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about Joe Biden speaking to a camera and speaking right at the camera, but he was, you know, he was putting some emotion into it. He was having at least a more photogenic smile. I'm not saying hers wasn't. I mean, it seemed fake.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Forced.
Yeah. Forced. And I can't say much about, you know, Kelly Loeffler's smile, but at that moment it seemed extremely forced. And that may seem like a small thing I'm talking about, but for many people, a smile is what really matters when really 230,000 Americans are dead and mm-hmm. we're in economic downturn. And so that little smile of saying, you know, you are okay, and you will get through this. We will get through this. It means a lot. And that's what Joe Biden went out and did. But when she talked to the American people, what was she doing? Putting out allegations that simply aren't true with Raphael Warnock. I was fact-checking her as she spoke, fact-checking Warnock as well, about his rebuttals. So when you speak to the American people directly about issues that don't really concern them, they concern Raphael Warnock, and the Warnock team and but what he has to say, it's not as effective as Joe Biden going out and speaking about issues that Americans all care about.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that it he mentioned it best. Right.
Yeah.
The attacks on Warnock aren't going to win her a seat. It's substantive policy and it's policy decisions that are going to win her that seat. And I think that you know Warnock differentiated himself just because of how he mentioned what he was going to do in terms of policy. I get why he didn't say he was going to donate a certain amount. Or advocate for a certain amount towards the coronavirus relief funding.
Yes.
That's simply not at the moment what's applicable. What's really important right now is recognizing the president-elect, working with the president-elect to create change, working with Congress, people from all parties to create change. It's not about you know dividing ourselves and dividing the people. And I think that he made a good advertisement.
Yeah.
For the people of Georgia, not for himself.
Yeah, absolutely. And man, this reminds me a lot. This episode that we're doing right now, conversation that we're having, reminds me a lot of the first presidential debate. And I absolutely hated the fact that it was just an hour of bashing Donald Trump, the episode that we did. But the thing is, it was horrible. That first presidential debate was horrible. There was nothing else that we could have done except bash Donald Trump for an hour because it was terrible. It was disappointing. It made me feel uncomfortable. It broke my heart as an American, as someone that truly loves this country, to have to sit there and listen to the president's remarks. And so while I hate making the episode because I always want to appeal centrist, and I don't want to make other people's point of views seem like they're not, you know, important or as if I can't listen to them, because I can really listen to anyone's point of view and I can really have a conversation with anyone. And this just it's like a relapse of that, because it was just terrible. There's nothing we can't say. Kelly Loeffler really did this well, besides appeal to her base, which we said in the first, we said the exact same thing with the first presidential debate. And I say that to say this. One thing that I really loved that Warnock did was a response that he had to Kelly Loeffler. And it was, you keep saying that I want to, it was something along the lines, I'm paraphrasing here. You keep saying that I want to defund the police. How come you were one of the, one of 10 senators that actually voted to defund police? It was, it just came out of nowhere. It was a bomb that came out of nowhere. And his whole response, I think there was multiple things mentioned in his response there that stuck out to me the most. It was a very, very interesting response. It was powerful.
Well, I think that for many people, it didn't stick out. And that's the issue. Because I think that what he didn't do during that time was continue to say, well, Kelly Loeffler, what about you? Actually defunding the police. It's not about talk, not about lies. It's about what you did. And I think that if he did, you know, push forth that front, it would have helped him.
Yeah.
It certainly would have helped him. Yeah. And I think that he may not have done enough. It's not my decision to make. I think he won by and far. But I think that Georgia, just Kelly Loeffler, deserves more. The people deserve more. Her constituents deserve more. She still serves me. She serves you. And she's what's going to, you know, restore their balance if they want to actually become a dominating party in the Senate.
Yeah.
Now, you talk about Trump coming out and stumping for Perdue and Loeffler on Saturday, and for himself, for the most part, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched a little bit of that, and I turned it off after the first word. Not a little bit. I turned it off after the first word because I was on my computer doing some homework after the SAT, and I watched that. And the fact was that he came on, I think it was Saturday. Yeah, it was the SAT day. And I watched it, and the first word he says is, "We won Georgia." The first line. We won Georgia. And I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
It's off.
Yeah.
TV's off.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, that turns off half of the establishment, Republicans. And it turns off every single other Democratic independent American voter in Georgia. And so it seems like they don't care about their constituents. They don't care about democracy. They only care about whatever it is gets the money, power, influence. It seems very, very, very different than what I've seen democracy in America as. I mean, you talk about Trump pretending to care about America, pretending to care about democracy, and coming out and saying things like this, people behind him with no masks on, having Save America, return the election, him blasting Governor Kemp, who is a Loeffler ally. Loeffler and Perdue both support Governor Kemp. And he comes out and he's stumped for Kemp, and he goes, Kemp shouldn't be governor, starts putting up another opponent for Kemp. It's who are you loyal to?
Yeah.
Is it
himself?
Kemp? No, listen. Here's what it is. Is it Kemp? Is it Trump? Or is it us? That's the question.
Yeah. I think it's always Trump first. Trump first,
yeah,
then Trump, probably Trump after that, and then Trump's money after that. And then Ivanka Trump, and then all his other kids, and then us.
We'll go Trump.
Hold on. And then
we'll
us. And then Don Jr. That's probably.
And then Eric Trump. And then Eric Trump below that. Give it that. Yeah. And then Rudy Giuliani below that. No, we can keep going for days.
I put Rudy above Don Jr.
Maybe. I can't read Kelly Loeffler's mind. And then we forgot this. I think it is honestly, it's number one, Kelly. Number two, the Trumps.
Yeah.
Number three, and this is going off of so far, but just Kelly, the Trumps, Kemp. And then the people.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
And
you called it, you know, a Perdue Loeffler rally. I called it an Ossoff Warnock rally. It really just appealed to, I mean, literally, if I was a you know, John Ossoff right now and Reverend Warnock, I'd say, hey, you know, we're not going to hold a rally, but we're going to have a drive-in movie that that's gonna get you guys to want to vote for us. And then I'd let a lot of people drive in, and I put on a projector, and I just let Trump speak. I'd just play verbatim the tape of the whole rally, and I'd just say, like, I'd end the movie with, why wouldn't you vote for us? I mean, it was just, again, it turned off a lot of voters. And not only does it doesn't turn off a lot of voters in the sense that that they're going to go out and the Republicans are going to go out and now vote for John Ossoff and Reverend Warnock. It also turns off voters to voting. And you're not turning off, you know, liberal voters, because there's, you know, there's the term voter suppression. And voter suppression was mentioned tonight in the debate. And voter suppression is not the same thing as voter fraud.
Right.
Voter suppression is a legal tactic. It is a legal tactic to suppress votes. It involves gerrymandering. It's not the same thing as not counting an African American vote. Essentially, it's what it is. But it is not, it's not election fraud. It's not voter fraud. So while voter suppression did take place in 2016, and voter suppression does not just take place in the Republican Party, voter suppression takes place in the Democratic Party. There have been Democrats that have gerrymandered in order for rural areas to make it harder for them to vote so that they could win and that they could stay in power, which is why we need a third party, in my opinion, to redraw district lines like they do in Canada. But we can't deny the fact that there was voter suppression in 2016, but it's not the same thing as voter fraud. And what's happening here is that there is now going to be voter suppression in this election. But the voter suppression is coming from the baby in the White House that just lost his election. That's where the voter suppression is coming out. He's going to keep people home.
Yeah. You're right. And some of them aren't going to vote because they think the election is flawed. It's two things. It's number one, the election being flawed. Let's say it. The election's flawed, guys. Don't go vote. Yep. Please, Republicans, if you're Republican, you believe the election's flawed, don't go vote. I seriously want you to consider it, because, I mean, if you don't believe in democracy, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're – it is just – that's the one thing. The second thing is that you're not going to get people out of the ballots. I talked to my dad. We had a pretty heated discussion about this, about whether or not Warnock won that debate. And what I said was, Dad, would any normal person go out of their way to go vote in the election after that debate performance by Loeffler if they were Republican?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there is. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a single person, because, I mean, you look at what she said and what she talked about. I can't name a single time she talked about substantive policy that she implemented during her tenure as a senator, except for that one thing when she said, well, I brought relief aid back to Georgia when she was pressed on it. And that was back in April.
Yeah.
Right. And people certainly, if you're hurting right now, you know that aid didn't go to you, and that aid hasn't gone to you, you know, since April. And so it's just like, how would they go out and vote for Loeffler? But we've seen a lot happen in 2020. I wouldn't, you know, count it out of the table. But I just think that you have to do more for your constituents. And the biggest thing, we talk about this in AP government so many times. There's two things. Number one, voter suppression. This is beyond the scope of the class, but that voter fraud has only really happened back with the mob bosses, back in during the Great Depression, that era, when you had the mob bosses going out and actually, you know, soliciting votes and threatening people for voting and things like that, suppression and fraud. And what's happening beyond that is that when you have an incumbent senator, right, the number one advantage they teach you about is that they have the advantage of using their record.
Mm-hmm.
Loeffler has no record.
Yeah.
She can't use her record. The only person who can use Loeffler's record is Warnock. And that's the reality of it.
Yeah. 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 Definitely the reality of it. And I think that he effectively does use her record against her, frankly. One of the only things that he voted on, I mean, he tore her up about it, about defunding the police. I don't even think that she was good. She kept her base. Bravo. She didn't even fire them up, though.
No.
She didn't excite them. There was nothing. I feel like the radical leftist Raphael Warnock was meant to excite her base, but you can't get someone excited when you say, you know, if I'm a Falcons fan, unfortunately, but if I say go Falcons, it's like, I'm not going to get anyone excited with that. You got to be ecstatic about it. So if you're going to be saying, you know, screw the Saints, you got to be ecstatic about it. Yeah. I'm still a little bit upset about today's game, but regardless, she didn't fire up her base. And you're right. I don't even think that the most hardcore Republicans are interested in going out to, they're not putting it at the top of their agendas. Just like she hasn't been putting us at the top of hers.
I mean, it's true. I don't think that you can, there's not much to say about that. I think that the one person who is saving their literal butts right now is President Trump.
If that,
and, you know, you got to give it to him. You got to give it to him because he fires up crowds. There's no massacres. They get fired up. And that's only 35% of Georgia. That's the hardcore Republicans are only about 35% of Georgia. And that's not nearly enough to win the election right now. Now, you know, you look at, yeah, it's the polar opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You think about Trump being yelling, using emotion his way, and left are coming out and saying, well, I support Trump, but I support Trump. I'm a robot in doing so.
Yeah.
And so it's a big contrast. I think Trump would have tore Leffler apart if he had realized
definitely.
This is going that way, this way.
Definitely.
I think that he would have tore apart like he tore Kemp apart. But you look at Georgia right now and how Geoff Duncan, our lieutenant governor, who has been a staunch Trump ally, Kemp being a strong Trump ally, Raffensperger having voted for Trump and being a Republican himself, coming out and saying the election was not rigged and that we have a system that is fair. You talked about voter suppression before. Now, the reality is that Georgia has so many voter suppression and suppression tactics to where they can't even say there was fraud because they've crossed out every single possibility of there being fraud through those suppression tactics.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of it. So if they say that there's fraud, then they're saying their suppression tactics aren't working right because those are intended to stop fraud in name.
Yeah.
And so they have no choice. They either say that their policies themselves, their record is bad, they taint their own records, they won't win a re-election, or they say they're against Trump, who they're not tied to anymore. Right. Trump's out of office. We know that. As sensible American citizens, we know that.
Yeah.
And so nobody's tied to Trump anymore. And slowly but surely the Trump name will fade out because we're not looking at a Trumpist party. Maybe we are. I don't know. But I have faith in the Republican Party and in that they will recover and they will become once again the Republican Party, not the Trumpist party.
Yeah, definitely. And did you see the news about the attorney general wanting to resign?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
I think that that's very, I mean, it's just interesting. It just seems like a reality TV show, the headlines that come out of this administration. It's like,
have you ever watched Veep?
I have not watched Veep.
Veep, if you guys have watched Veep, I would consider you to watch it, or consider you guys should consider watching, because it's exactly like what's happening right now. It's a comedy TV show about the Vice President of the United States, and it's satire. And the whole thing, people talk about it. There's parallels between Veep and what's happening right now. And so if you want to see something that's just like what we're going through, go console yourselves. Go watch Veep.
Yeah. Go watch anything that can make you laugh right now, because I think we all need it.
Go watch Zach Bornstein. Go watch Blair Erskine.
There you go.
Please.
Two of our past guests. Man, Blair's been killing it on Twitter. Blair's been absolutely murdering it. Hopefully we can get her back on. If you guys didn't watch that episode, go watch that episode. There was a lot of crazy stuff that happened in that episode, and it was just a good time. I loved recording with her. Another thing, Biden came out with a pick earlier today, but I wanted to ask you about the diversity within his administration, and with his picks. I don't know if the complaints are just about it. I thought that he was being very diverse in his picks, and I don't think that he's made a lot of picks yet. And of the ones that he's made, I feel like he's been pretty diverse. So what is all this stuff about the NAACP like being pissed off at him? And I know the Hispanic caucus, the Democratic Hispanic caucus, was also calling on him to pick more diverse or people with more diverse backgrounds. But I felt like he was doing that already.
Well, yeah, I heard about it. I was on Pod Save America, and I heard, what is his name, Dan Pfeiffer or John Favreau talking about it, and they were talking about how the Black Caucus, Hispanic Caucus have been wanting more positions, people of color, in the cabinet. But I think that he's done a good job. I think that he's reflected America, because he's not, you know, America as a whole, 60% of America is white. You got to consider that. And he's trying to reflect America. 60% of his cabinet's going to be white. He's not going to have an all-black or an all-Hispanic or an all-minority cabinet for that matter.
Yeah.
So I think he's doing a pretty good job. I would say that he should nominate, in my personal opinion, being that it's a podcast about our opinions, I would say he should nominate a black person for the attorney general. It'd be a good statement.
I think he should nominate Hillary.
For attorney general, that would piss a lot of people off.
That was a joke.
A lot of bad places.
That was a joke.
She wouldn't even get it past. No. She would not even. Let's be real about this. She wouldn't get it past the first hearing.
How ironic would it be, though? How ironic would it be if she puts Trump in jail?
I mean, it wouldn't be uncharacteristic.
As attorney general.
Well, the only way to get him away is by putting him in jail. They'll continue to have presence.
What do you think about him trying to pardon himself? Like preemptively?
Well, look, he was going to pardon Ivanka preemptively.
Yeah, and Rudy Giuliani.
He still might do it. And Giuliani. If he pardoned himself, it'd be his last act. He would have to concede the election. Or not concede, but he'd have to get kicked out of office. I don't see him getting kicked out until January 22nd, 2021. I don't see it happening.
Yeah.
If that's when the inauguration is, I didn't suspect this, that I would see this, but I see him getting dragged out of office by Secret Service agents on that day.
Yes.
And that's so hard to think about.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring in a quote here just as a funny thing, but Zach Bornstein just tweeted, breaking, Giuliani's been airlifted to Walter Reed and Sons piano repair. And if you got that, I love you. I love you. He's hilarious. But anyways,
Zach Bornstein is so witty. With his jokes.
So witty.
But let's
get back into that. What are we talking about again?
Pardoning himself and a bunch of different things. But the thing is, this is my worry and this is my concern. Did he break a law that like we don't know about? Because again, we're not talking about something. We're not talking about how do I say this? What's the way that I'm trying to word this? We're not talking about something that is false. He is genuinely considering pardoning himself. And this is coming from his own, like from sources close to the White House. He is considering pardoning himself. So I'm thinking right now, you know, I can think of a couple things that he's pardoning himself for, but he's called all of these things, you know, hoaxes and stuff. My concern is that he's trying to figure out if he can pardon himself for something that we don't know that he's done yet. Do you get what I'm saying?
Here's something I want to tell you about. And I was looking at this earlier, but the White House fired all Pentagon advisory positions, a lot of them, and they installed Trump loyalists. And those Trump loyalists have been denying the Biden campaign access to the Pentagon, the transition team. And I think that there's something in the Pentagon. And I talked to my dad about it, but there's something in there because they're installing loyalists now and they're denying Biden access. So it certainly seems like there's something going on there. And I can't speculate that much, but I know there's something they're trying to potentially hide, potentially delete something. I don't know. It certainly does seem, in the words of teens today and ourselves, sus for them to be taking out positions in that administration.
Yeah.
In that field. But I don't want to, you know, pull out theories and
Theories. We're not for it.
No, we're not. Yeah. We're not like that.
But
if he gets arrested, then I'll believe it. But if not, it's sus. Yeah.
But
that's
it's just weird. Like, that's my thing, right? Because obviously there's the whole Russia stuff and there's this stuff about him being in debt. But like, I mean, the way to end this Trump presidency would be like, I pardoned myself for the murder of X, Y, and Z. It's like, whoa, we didn't know you did that. It's like, where did that come from? How are you pardoning? It's just like drop a bomb out of nowhere. It's like, I pardoned myself for the murder of Rudy Giuliani. And Rudy's like, I'm here. What are you talking about? It's like, I'm pardoning myself for the future, man. You gotta calm down. You didn't win me the election. But it's just, I don't know. It sounds like a TV show and it sounds like a joke and it sounds like a book that you'd read about. What if the president were to preemptively pardon himself? And like this, like he's like a Vox style video. It doesn't seem real. Thankfully I think to end this podcast in a very fitting way, Reverend Warnock said that, you know, it is dark right now, but before dawn, I'm going to rephrase what he said because I think that he messed up in what he was saying. But he said it is dark right now, but it is always dark before dawn. Soon the morning will come. And with that morning, you know, will come hope. And I think that it's true. Right now, we are on the verge of daybreak. You know, it is dark right now in America. That we cannot deny that. Our fellow patriots are dying. You know, citizens are dying. It would be negligent to say that right now is not a very dark, dark time in America. But as he said, soon enough, we will be told to put our shoes on, get dressed, get ready, and go to work. Get ready to go. And we have to hit the ground running. And we have to get back to being the Americans that we were. And the Americans that I think in our heart of hearts we are. I'm excited, and I think that it's about to be daybreak.
Yeah. I hope so. I certainly hope so.
Yeah, but it's imperative. It's imperative that we vote. I think we were going to go with the same thing. We got to vote in order to get to that point.
Go help with the polls.
Exactly.
Go spread the vote. Go make some calls. Go do what you can to spread whichever candidate you want to get out there, whether it's a robot or a radical, liberal, leftist, Raphael Warnock, not a reverend, go out and spread the vote. Get out the vote, because it's imperative that Americans vote and believe in democracy. And the only way we do so is by spreading that.
That's what we got.
We were political today, and I think that we deserve to be political. That's what the American system gives us. And the fact that we are able to express our feelings via this amazing thing that we know as the media, the First Amendment gives us that ability. And so we have to appreciate that. We have to appreciate the American way, the American Constitution, the American democracy. And we do so in one way, and the best way to do so is to vote. So go out, if you're 18 years old, go out and vote.
Absolutely, absolutely, 1,000%. And a big part of voting, and unfortunately, we didn't get to see a discussion be had between Senator Ossoff and David look at me getting ahead of myself. Senator Perdue, David Ossoff. God damn it! Well, hold on here. Let me.
Senator Perdue and Dave, you met the man. Come on.
I know. I got this. Senator Perdue and John Ossoff. Unfortunately, there was not a discussion had there, but we had an amazing discussion, ladies and gentlemen, and we want to thank you for tuning in and listening to that discussion, and we incentivize you to go out and have these discussions. Go out and have these conversations. It's imperative to our democratic process. It's imperative to us as people that we keep learning. Muhammad Ali says, a man that thinks the same way that he did at 20, at the age of 50, is a fool. And in order for us to not be fools, we have to go out and have conversations and listen to differing opinions. And that's what we did here today. So I want to thank my amazing co-host, Varun, for adding to the conversation, bringing insight, bringing his perspective, his opinions, as he always does. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to yet another episode of Politity. And be sure to tune in this Friday for another episode. Thank you, guys.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Politity and Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/politityandpodcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is, once again, www.patreon.com/politityandpodcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/politityandpodcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.politityandpodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damien, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Politine. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing conversation. My friend, I do appreciate your input as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.